Hello, and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Tonight we bring you the first installment of a two-part Christmas special, based on a story by Meredith Nicholson called A Reversible Santa Claus. The second part of this show will be aired next week at the same time, right here on KBIA. In keeping with our traditions, the Maplewood Barn Radio players have chosen a little-known tale by an obscure author as our Christmas present to you. Now we hope you enjoy part one of The Reversible Santa Claus by Meredith Nicholson.
It all started when I stole the Roadster on Christmas Eve. I knew it wasn't the right thing to do, but it sure seemed like the easiest thing to do. Lumpy and I were both soaked through, miserable, from an icy drizzle that had been coming down. We'd just come out of the woods, after 2 hours of rough terrain, and were hiding in some bushes by the roadside.
I don't think you ought to steal the Roadster, Hopper. How about we just take the trolley instead?
No, Lumpy, my friend. It seems to me that Roadster may have been left there by Providence. Maybe Santa left it for us. We still got 20 miles to go.
Look, I don't want to go back to prison. It didn't leave a real soft spot in my heart, even though that's where we hooked up. Say, you okay? Having trouble getting your breath?
Look, I'm 48 and not in great shape, since we went straight and started the chicken farm.
All right. Let's just rest here a minute while you catch your wind.
This is my story. My friends call me the Hopper, and for most of my life, when I wasn't in prison, I've been in hiding, a fugitive hunted by the police. My latest experience of involuntary servitude had been under the auspices of the state of Oregon for the trifling indiscretion of safe-blowing. Well, I served my sentence, and through a series of hops, skips, and jumps, I landed in Maine and needed money real bad. Now, even though I'm a crook, my dream for many years had been to save up enough money to go straight, so that I could retire and live as a decent, law-abiding citizen for the rest of my days. Several prison chaplains had talked to me about morality and philosophy and all that kind of stuff. I know there's things that is and things that ain't. But if push came to shove, I would probably still be categorized as impenitent. As I moved south through Maine, I stumbled over an express car which had been sidetracked and lifted $40,000 from its safe. Now, $40,000 is no inconsiderable sum of money, and this jackpot had to be protected. I made my way to Manhattan while I planned my new career as a capitalist. Motivated by a desire to live an honest life, I bought a chicken farm 15 miles from New Haven and opened a bank account under my newly adopted name of Charles S. Stevens of Happy Hills Farm. Feeling the need of companionship, I married a lady somewhat my junior, a second-rate shoplifter. Weeping Mary, we called her, because she would cry at the drop of a hat. She had got into trouble with the law and had gratefully accepted my offer to be bound in holy wedlock. Then I brought on James Whitesides, alias Lumpy. When I met Lumpy in the Ohio pen, he was in charge of tending the prison poultry and was familiar with the most advanced scientific theories on chicken culture. You see, we needed someone who actually knew something about chickens. I'll tell you the truth, we were all still wanted criminals, with our pictures up in post offices and all, but it had been a while and we'd figured any decent policeman should be focused on more current felons. Still, a man at a New Haven station had looked at us suspiciously, and it made us nervous. So we were headed home overland when we found ourselves in the bushes looking at the Roadster.
I see what you mean about Providence. It's even headed toward home. Can you do it?
Lumpy, I'm familiar with cars. I can get it started.
Well, are you familiar with the prison sentences they've been handing out for lifting cars? I don't think we ought to
Look,
do it.
Look, we'll just ditch it somewhere near home.
Wonder where the owner is.
He's probably in that little cottage, enjoying his evening meal.
It would be good to put more distance between us and that scary guy back at the station. Why did you pinch that bill book off that wealthy-looking man on the train? That was just plain dumb, Hop.
I don't know. I don't know why I did it. There was that piece of red leather sticking up out of a pocket. I couldn't resist. People should not go around with bill books sticking out of their pockets. It's not fair to people like me, who are easily tempted.
Now, Hop, you and me and Mary all agreed that we would run the chicken farm according to the Ten Commandments, as well as all statutory laws, state and federal.
You sound just like Mary.
That's where I got it from.
You're right. Mary won't be happy. But I am so chilled and wet and wretched, I gotta get home. I am ready to take her wrath and her chastisement and promise to sin no more.
And on Christmas Eve of old days.
Come on, let's go. Okay, it looks like we made it. I don't see anyone chasing us down the road.
Hopper, this stinks. Do you know the courts are giving people up to 20 years for car theft? I didn't bargain for this.
Oh, don't be so jumpy, Lumpy. I'll think of something. At least we are in out of the cold. What was that? I didn't catch what you said.
I didn't say nothing.
Goody, keep running.
Why are you talking like that?
Like what?
Talking like a baby. Cut it out.
But I wasn't Oh, no, Hopper. We got bigger trouble than car theft. There's a little kid in the back seat.
A kid?
Make car go fast.
Oh, this is terrible. Car theft and kidnapping at the same time? They'll put us away for life.
Now just take it easy, Lumpy. Don't panic. Are you sure it's a kid and not a cat or something?
It don't sound like no cat to me. Nope. There's two big blue eyes staring at us from the back seat.
Get up, Maiden Skedaddle.
Well, at least he's a pleasant little guy. Looks like he is enjoying the ride.
But this is kidnapping, Hopper. Kidnapping, do you hear me?
Well, it's involuntary kidnapping. We didn't mean to...
Maiden One, make him get up and go.
You're driving too fast. Slow down or we'll get picked up.
Well, the kid wants to go fast. Look, make him sit down.
Here, sit still, little feller. What are we going to do, Hopper?
I'm thinking. Just keep the kid in his seat.
I can't believe you got us into this. Look, we got to get rid of this baby. You know how missing kids stir things up.
Well, that's easier said than done.
Look, let's just put him by the side of the road. Somebody's bound to find him pretty quick.
In this weather? We can't do that. Besides, what if nobody comes along and found him? He might wander off. Besides, he's a nice little shaver. If he was screaming and carrying on, I'd be more prone to ditch him here. But he is such a pleasant little boy.
Billy.
Look, he even knows my name, my real name. That has to be a good omen.
I doubt he knows your real name. Probably his name, don't you think?
Yeah, you're most likely right. Look, we have accidentally stolen a baby. No denying that. But it doesn't look like he minds being stolen. At least he's cheerful.
Look. How about we just turn around and take him back?
You think we should just take him home and hand him back to his parents? We are bound to get arrested then.
How about we just plant him in front of the door, ring the doorbell, and run?
That's no way to treat a friendly little cuss like this. Besides, somebody is bound to be searching for him by now, not to mention the car. Look, it's Christmas Eve, and I am going to do the right thing by him, even if there is some risk involved for us. I am not leaving him out in the snow.
Steady, little fellas. Sit down. Yeah, risk for us. I don't want any part of this.
Merry Christmas.
See? Even he knows it's Christmas.
Santa Claus has come.
Oh, how could we put that sweet little shaver out in this weather? No, we'll take him home and decide what to do about it there.
Hurry up. Me's going home to me's grandpa's Christmas tree.
Right you are, little one. We'll get you to your grandpa's.
Look, I never cared nothing about Christmas, except when the warden was especially generous with the food.
That may be, but Shaver should have all the joys of Christmas, and I am not going to deprive him. He's just a little kid.
Hey, this is fun.
All right, we're here.
Pull around behind the barn and shut off the lights. We don't want anybody to see the car.
Of course I'm going to pull behind the barn. You think I'm a complete idiot?
Well, with what happened tonight, I'm beginning to wonder... Let's see what Mary has to say about this.
Come on, little shaver. Let's get you in the house.
Okay.
Oh, he sure is a cute little fella.
He's a prison sentence waiting to happen. That's what he is.
There you all are. I was getting worried. Wait a minute. What you got there, Bill?
Oh, just a little friend I picked up. Ain't he cute? Look, he went right for the ketchup.
Looks like he's trying to swallow the whole baller.
Here, give me that, you little... Come out with it, Bill. What have you been doing?
Nothing. There was just a little mix-up, that's all. Ain't he just a doll playing with all that kitchen stuff?
Out with it, Hop. Stop that, you little snipe. Nothing was said about kidnapping, and I won't stand for it.
See, I told you she wouldn't take it very good.
When I heard the car coming into the yard, I knew something was wrong. You had no right to do it, Bill. Hooking a car and a kid all in one swoop. We were going straight. Remember? You shouldn't have done it, Bill. Especially not right at Christmas time.
Now, don't cry, Mary. I knew you would chastise me, but you don't need to start tearing up.
Well, we don't call her Weeping Mary for nothing.
Here, let's get him out of those heavy clothes, and maybe he will lay off the pots and pans.
Get out of the way. Let me do it, you klutz.
Lumpy, get him some kind of utensil to play with.
Sure, how about
this? No, not a fork, you imbecile. He's liable to put his eye out.
Okay, what about this big serving spoon?
No, he can play with my watch. It's bright and shiny.
His clothes sure are fancy. He must come from a well-to-do family. They'll be after us like flies on honey.
Yeah, I'll take care of it. A cute little shaver, ain't he?
Me wants me dinner.
Dinner?
Thank you for your interpretive skills, Lumpy.
I'll see what I got. What do you suppose he likes to eat?
Something with milk in it ought to do.
Well, go on and tell me what you done.
Now, Mary, be calm. There was a man on the train with a leather pocketbook sticking out of his pocket, and...
Oh, don't tell me you pinched a pocketbook of all the...
It gets worse, Mary. There wasn't any money in it, only papers.
Well, if that isn't the dumbest...
Now, Mary, hold your temper. We saw a guy who looked like a cop at the Haven Station, so we took off through the woods. That's when we stumbled on the roadster and decided to take it so we could get out of the weather.
The weather? You stole a car because you were cold?
And wet.
And how do you plan to get us out of this mess?
I've been thinking about that.
Well, you better think quick. There could be a doggone posse coming down on us any time.
Quit your cussing. Can't you see that Shaver ain't used to it? Shaver's a little gent. That's what Shaver is.
All the worse for us. Kidnapping a rich kid.
It wasn't kidnapping, Lumpy. He was taken by accident. Now, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Take Shaver back to his ma.
Take him back?
I'm going to make a Christmas present of Shaver to his family.
Look out. He's going to throw your watch.
Shoot. Well, there goes my watch.
Me watch Christmas tree. Mama Grandpa. Me watch Santa Claus.
Shut that kid up. They'll hear him hollering in China.
Here, let me have him. I've got some milk and bread for him. Lumpy's right. We can get the chair for the kidnapping. You got to get him out of here, Bill.
The little shaver's hungry, and once he gets a full stomach, he'll go right to sleep. Isn't that right, little buddy?
Santa Claus is coming. Now it's Christmas.
You got to get rid of him. He can't sleep here.
Just listen to that little shaver. Of course Santa is coming, and we're going to take good care of you in the meantime.
Shh, he's going to sleep.
Just put him in my bed and cover him up good. He looks so innocent. Just precious.
Look, Hop, you got to move quick. We're going to play the honesty card, remember? I don't want to go back to prison.
Hush up, Lumpy. I'm going to take care of it.
Since his folks are rich, we could get a lot for him if we weren't playing the honesty card.
We ain't going to ransom him. I shouldn't have stole that bill book on the train. That was a mistake. But I don't want to hear any more about it.
What are you going to do with that kid? Tell me that.
I'm going to take him back to his folks. That's what I'm going to do.
You're crazy. Plum crazy. Take him to an orphan asylum and tell him you found him on the side of the road. But one way or t'other, keep me out of it.
I found the car in the road, officer, right there by the house. And the kid was in it all by himself. And being human and respectable, I brought him in to keep him from freezing to death. If they try to arrest me, that's what I'm going to tell the cops. It ain't kidnapping. It's life-saving. That's what it is.
That might work.
Look, I'm going to go back and have a look at that place where we got him. Kind of strange they left a kid out in the vehicle. Mighty strange now that I think about it. He keeps talking about Christmas at his grandpa's. His folks must have been getting ready to take the kid there for Christmas.
They're rich, and all the detectives in the area will be looking for him. You better phone the New Haven cops and let them know you picked him up. Then your spiel about finding him will sound more likely.
I'll find some way of getting the kid back without seeing any cops. I'll just sneak back and have a look at the place, see what I can figure out. I ain't turning Shaver over to the cops. They don't have a clue about us being here, and I ain't taking any chances.
You better take your revolver just in case.
Yeah, and a jimmy for breaking in. Don't forget a flashlight.
Yeah, I'll take everything I need. You two just keep an eye on the little Shaver. I want him happy when I get back. In the meantime, if anybody turns up here asking about the kid, you tell him what I said. We found him in the car and took him to keep him from freezing. You'll have the car and the kid here to show him. And as for me, I'm off looking for his folks.
Oh, please be careful, Bill. This is a horrible mess.
There's things what is and things what ain't. I'll take a peek at the house and see how it can be done. I'm going to clean it all up before daylight, so don't worry. Just leave it to the hopper. The snow had stopped, and the stars were shining as I made my way back to the house where I'd found Shaver. When I reached the house, I approached cautiously. There was no lights on, and no sign of frantic parents looking for a lost baby. I went around to the back, and jimmied open a window. After listening for a minute to make sure no one was stirring, I slid through into the house. Like any experienced burglar, I just used my flashlight every now and then. There was a baby hamper on the dining room table, which made me think this was probably Shaver's house. He had most likely been taken to the car while his parents went back in to get the hamper, and maybe some other stuff. But the house seemed deserted, which made me jumpy. Shouldn't the parents be searching frantically for their missing child? There was a studio full of half-finished paintings just off the living room. That's where I found the first note. It said,
6:30. Dear sweetheart, this is a fine trick you've played on me. I've been expecting you back all afternoon. At 6, I decided you were going to spend the night with your infuriated father and thought I'd try my luck with mine. I put Billy into the roadster and ran over to the Flemings to say Merry Christmas and tell them we were off. While I was gone, you came along and took Billy and the car. It would have been nice if you'd let me know you were leaving. How fine it would be if everything could be resolved between our families for Christmas. I'm just trolleying out to Father's to see if I can settle him down. I'll be back early in the morning. Love always, Roger.
Billy was undoubtedly Shaver's nickname, and I was tickled that we had the same name. But the note made me wonder about the father. First he leaves a baby alone in a car, and then when he finds him missing, writes a little note to his wife and takes off. Well, it just didn't seem right to me. But these people were obviously artists, and artists, so I had heard, were a strange breed, and didn't have much common sense. So I stuck the note in my pocket and kept searching the place. Since his folks weren't here, it looked like Shaver would have to spend Christmas night at Happy Hills Farm. Then, in the living room, I found another note on the table. So I wedged myself into a corner where no one could see my light and read,
7:00. Dear Roger, I just got back from Father's where I spent the last 3 hours trying to cool him off. I didn't tell you I was going because I thought you might object, but it seemed best, dear, and I hope you'll forgive me. And now I find you've taken off with Billy. I assume you've gone to your father's to see what you can do. I'm headed into New Haven to do some last-minute shopping. Don't worry about me. I'll be back soon. We were so happy with each other, dear. And if only we could get our foolish fathers to stop fighting, how beautiful everything would be. And we could all have such a merry, merry Christmas. Love, Muriel.
From the two letters, I could see that Shaver's parents were dealing with some argument between their respective fathers. Muriel must have failed to see Roger's letter in the studio, and this was lucky for me. But Muriel might come back at any time, and she couldn't find me in the house, or it would blow my cover. That's when the overhead lights came on abruptly, and a female voice said,
"Stop right where you are, or I'll shoot."
This must have been Shaver's mother, a pretty young woman, but the pistol she had leveled at me made me pay attention. I was caught, and all my plans about returning Shaver vanished.
"Don't move, or I'll shoot. Now, step into that corner and keep your hands up where I can see them."
She meant business. I could see that. So I did exactly what she said. I expected her to call for help, but to my surprise, she calmly sat down, rested her right elbow on the arm of the chair, and carelessly dangled the pistol in my direction. My thoughts turned towards judges and juries and electric chairs.
"Now, you just stand right there while I think a minute."
"Yes, ma'am." Now, this might not look good, but
I saw you through the window when you entered this room, and I watched you read that note. Now, why did you do that instead of packing up the silver?
"Well, miss, I thought it was odd that there wasn't anybody around, and the letter was just laying there, so I read it."
"It was very clever of you to crawl into that corner so nobody could see the light from the windows. Just how good of a burglar are you? Can you do a job safely without getting caught?"
"I guess, based on how easily you caught me, I ain't really that good. But I do have some experience in the field."
"If you're really a superior burglar, clever and brave enough to break into houses where people are living and steal things without making a mess of it, and if you can play fair about it, then I think maybe we can come to terms."
"Terms? You don't mean like prison terms, do you?"
No, that's not what I mean. But wait a minute, are you armed? I suppose I should have asked that in the first place."
"I got a gun in my coat, right side, that's all I got."
"Remove it using your fingertips and slowly lay it on that table over there. Now, move away. Good. You know, if you had tried anything, I would have killed you. Do you understand?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"You may sit down right there on the davenport, please." "Good. Now you may put your hands down, Mr. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't ask your name, should I? As an accomplished burglar, you wouldn't give me your real name anyway, now would you?"
"It's part of the code of honor among thieves, ma'am. I couldn't."
"Yes, of course. Now, we were speaking of the letter that I saw you reading. Let me explain it to you. My husband and I married against our father's wishes. Both of them were opposed to it."
"Kind of a Romeo and Juliet type thing."
"Why, yes. You have some culture, don't you? My father is just as stupid as my father-in-law, and the whole thing is just ridiculous. They have a bitter jealousy against each other because they are rival collectors."
"The only collectors I am familiar with come to the door with bills expecting payment."
"No, they are both collectors of ceramics, precious porcelains and that sort of thing."
"Yes'm?"
"For years, whenever there were auctions of these things, whenever there was something especially fine on the market, my father-in-law, Mr. Talbot, and my father, that would be Mr. Wilton, have bid for them and fought over them. They are experts, what you might call connoisseurs."
"Well, I wouldn't call them that, because I don't know what that means."
"The trouble is, Mr. Talbot and my father both like the same thing. And when one has something the other wants, the bad feelings explode. Over the years, they have both become very bitter. And just a few days ago, something happened that made it worse than ever."
"Ma'am, I would be able to pay better attention to your story if you put that pistol away."
"Oh, of course. I'm sorry."
"Thank you, ma'am."
"Last week, my father-in-law bought one of those pottery treasures. A blue and white vase made in China hundreds of years ago, and very, very valuable. And this made my father furious. And just before that, father had got hold of a jar, a perfectly wonderful piece of red Lang Yao pottery that collectors have coveted for years. This made Mr. Talbot angry at my father. My husband is at his father's now trying to talk some sense into him, and I visited my father today to ask him to stop being so foolish. You see, I wanted us all to be happy for Christmas. Christmas ought to be a time of joy and thanksgiving for everybody. Even people in your profession must feel that Christmas is the one day of the year when all hard feelings should be set aside and everybody should try to be happy."
"You're right, miss. It sure seems foolish for folks to get mad about jugs like you say. Were they empty, miss?"
"Empty? Oh, of course they were empty. They're like famous paintings, you know, or any beautiful work of art. It may seem odd to you that men can be so crazy about such things.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, just before lunch, without telling my husband, I went to Papa's to try to end this silly feud. I spent the afternoon there, and he was very unreasonable. Finally, I gave up and came home. I got here a little after dark and found my husband had taken Billy, that's our little boy, and gone. He must have gone to his father's to quiet him down. Both our fathers are crazy about Billy, but I never go to Mr. Talbot's, and my husband never goes. Oh, dear me, I ought to phone Roger and make sure Billy is all right.
Oh, I'm sure he's just fine.
Well, Mr. Talbot hates the telephone anyway, so I shouldn't bother them. It's so late now that surely Roger and Billy will spend the night there. You should see Billy. He's the cutest, smartest baby in the world.
I bet he is, ma'am.
It's strange that Roger didn't leave me a note of some kind.
I'm sure your kid's all right, miss.
Oh, yes. I know Roger will take care of Billy. And now you're probably wondering what I've been driving at all this time. Maybe it's providential, you showing up this way.
There's things what is and there's things what ain't, miss. I guess I'm not as bad as some.
If we could get hold of Father's Langyao jar and that blue and white vase Mr. Talbot has, if we could only do that. Oh, yes, that's it. I need you to steal two vases for me.
But I'm... Well, I don't know, miss. I've had a pretty busy day.
And there we must leave the Hopper for this week, as Muriel implores him to engage in a little housebreaking. We hope you've enjoyed this dramatization of Meredith Nicholson's short story, A Reversible Santa Claus, adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. Darren Helwidge is our sound engineer. The performers for this show were Steve Jones as the Hopper, Jeff Martin portrayed Lumpy, Pat Humphrey was Weeping Mary, Tracy Jones played Muriel, and Roger was played by Brad Buchanan, with a special appearance by Molly Dodge as the Shaver. Post-production effects are provided by Amy Humphrey and Joe Hayes of the band Clatter. Please join the Maplewood Barn Radio Players again next week for the second installment and exciting conclusion of A Reversible Santa Claus, right here on KBIA.